Can't you see it? The world running on EVs and renewable energy? Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
All right, now that we're done complaining about life, what do you got on the Warriors, T-Bone?
I've been a fan since Sleepy Floyd was Superman, so I've been a fan for a long time. This has been an amazing run, and I don't want to admit it's coming to an end, but I just don't know if there's a player that we need Clay in his prime again. We need a two guard that could pass the ball on a big man, and I just don't know if we have the people to make those trades.
Maybe not. You know, T-Bone, thanks so much,
yeah,
man.
T-Bone.
Enjoy the break. Thanks for everything you do. Look, I can't argue what a lot of you guys are saying. When you say I don't see the trade out there, Dibs, I can look you in the eye and go, I kind of don't either.
Yeah.
But I also know that whatever the Warriors are going to do, it's around the corner. I don't know how we would see it. I know we know what the rumors are, and maybe that's squashing our buzz about this whole thing because you're like, Jimmy Butler? That feels old and expensive. And then Monty Poole comes on and goes, yeah, they kind of agree with you. But everybody keeps saying the Warriors are going to be aggressive, but then there's like two deals that you hear about. Well, I don't know if those are actually the deals. And you'll say, well, then who else is available? And I don't know.
Well, everything
I don't
is,
know.
Quote, around the corner,
right, so
as
me,
you're saying.
To me, it's more conceptual. Let me just put it that way. It's
I get it.
The concept to me of get better now, and if it means that you might lose an asset down the road, to me, it still makes sense.
For me, the idea of get better now is a flawed concept because I don't believe that you can do anything that would have you get better now enough to where it's actually going to matter. So then, in my opinion, you're just shoveling future assets into a furnace and you're getting no warmth out of the fire. So you can get a little bit better and you can go from a 10 seed to an 8 seed and still not make it out of the play-in game, or you can get a little bit better and not advance at all. Now, you're allowed to get a lot better and go on a run. That certainly is possible. But for me, the risk-reward of dispensing of assets in the future, whatever you perceive them to be or I perceive them to be, it's obviously different.
Yep.
But you know what you're going to do between now and February 6th, I don't think can be enough to matter.
I also think that opinion, this is just my opinion, but I think your opinion is partially shaped by the frustration of the moment, which may be founded, or this may just be that moment in time. And it's a question that we try to answer in sports all the time. Hey, when they were playing really well, is that them? And now they're playing really bad. Is that them? Maybe we always go, well, the answer is probably somewhere in the middle. Well, we could probably further that answer even more. The answer is they're going to be both of those things at certain times, and you have to wait and see. Like, you come off of a loss against Memphis, 51 points, on a night where you were hoping to debut a new player that kind of at least had some sort of marked positive effect on what the Warriors are doing out there. And it looks like that. It's very, very deflating. But I bet a lot of opinions will change if they go win in Minnesota tomorrow night. So in other words, like the idea of get better, well, you have to know exactly what yard line you're standing on right now to know if you can get better. Dennis Schroeder acquisition might have made them better. We didn't get to see
it
last night.
It might have made them worse, too.
It might have.
It's possible.
I don't know how.
Well, I mean, look at last night.
Again, one night.
Since he's been on the team, they have a negative 51-point differential.
Sure, sure. Which, you know, is the smallest of sample sizes.
I'm just looking at facts here.
But it has nothing to do with him.
Was he any good last night?
Nobody was.
Wiggins was good.
Yeah.
Wiggins played well.
Sure, he did.
Which, you know, that's so Wiggins of him to just play great when no one else does.
Well, I mean,
and he's had a good year. He's probably had the best year of any Warrior this year.
I actually have arrived at a spot of discomfort with the way we talk about Andrew Wiggins as if he's just a contract, and you're still trying to get rid of him based off of some of the confusion that took place and frustration over the last 2 years.
I don't think that has anything to do with why you're going to get rid of him. He's the only tradable piece. If you want to make a big splash.
Depends on what you're trying to get.
If you're trying to get a $20 million Vucevic, then yeah, you don't have to trade Wiggins to get that done. That would involve a couple of your expirings and some picks as well if you wanted to get that player. But if you want to get a $50 million Jimmy Butler or a $45 million player, well, Wiggins has to be a part of the deal.
I get it. And actually, on some level, though, when we accept that, I do think there's a flaw in the thinking. Because it's like, oh, Jimmy Butler, he's such a name. But if you were to bring him or someone like him in, you're really only trying to measure how much better did you get from Andrew Wiggins to that player who's now going to be your small forward.
Right.
And Jimmy Butler versus Andrew Wiggins right now, I'm not going to say that Andrew is better than Jimmy, especially come playoff time, but the gap is not that big. It's not that big.
Right, right. And that's why
so does it make sense to give up Andrew to get older and give more?
And have a guy who is, you know, has the ability to opt out at the end of the year and has indicated that he will do that. So that's why, for me, I'm more interested in a smaller move where you get Vucevic and you keep Wiggins, even if it ends up costing you Kuminga. If it's Kuminga and Looney and a couple of picks, a first and maybe an unprotected first or whatever it is, that to me is more appetizing than getting rid of, like you said, you get rid of Wiggins and you bring in Butler, and so you go from Wiggins is a 7 out of 10 and Butler's an 8 out of 10. Does that really make you that much better?
I mean, I think I'm with you on that concept. I know just yesterday we put that mock Jimmy Butler trade out there.
Right.
And I said that I could be convinced into liking that for sure. I'm wooed by the idea of a finishing lineup of Steph and Dennis Schroeder and Jimmy Butler and Jonathan Kuminga and Draymond Green. I'm wooed by that. I really am. At the same time, there's just a lot of factors. To me, that's one if you're going to do it, that's the one where I'd be like, wait as long as you can. And the question becomes, are the Warriors just going to gather information so much that this happens a little bit later, or do they feel like, no, we don't just need this person for the playoffs, we need this person in order to get into the playoffs?
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then you want to do it earlier rather than later, and to me, that's not the Butler deal.
No, and that to me is not any deal. If you have to make a deal now just to try to get into the playoffs, that tells me that you're further away from actually making the playoffs than what one player can do for you down the stretch, right? And if you added a player at the deadline, if you get to the deadline 50 games into the year and you're 28 and 22 and you're the 5 seed, okay. Now maybe you're one player away from jumping up and getting into the top four, but if you're doing it now just to try to stay above 500, that's not the solution.
Let's let you hear from Monty Poole here in just a second, but first let's go to Gloria in the city who wants to talk it out a little bit. Hi, Gloria. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call, guys. Listen, I agree with the rationale of not going all in trying to get a overpriced aging star that'll make the Warriors two or three games better. I love the analogy from going from 10th to 8th. That really doesn't do much. But it was a little sad to see how old the stars look in Steph and Draymond. And I want to give credit to Memphis' swarming defense. There wasn't an answer for that. Plus, it was a poor time to have one of the worst shooting games in all the season. My question is, can Steve Kerr diagram any X's and O's to help this team get better? Can Buddy Hield play better? Others, it's the others that have to play better to take some of the pressure off of Draymond and Steph. I think that they're going to have to get their team together through the draft and maybe a free agent during the February deadline. I just don't think there's a star out there that can make them better to go from maybe a six seed. There's just no one out there that can help them in that endeavor.
Yeah.
I'd love to take your answer.
Sure. Gloria, thank you for calling. Again, the way I look at it, when we say there's no one out there, I don't fully know over the next month and a half who's out there and what it would cost. But I'll share this. Kyle Shanahan actually said something today in his press conference where he insinuated that coaching gets a little bit overrated. In other words, we look at the performance of players on the field and we blame the coach for this, that, and the other. And he's like, we get almost too much credit when it goes well, too much blame when it doesn't go well. The coach's job is to put the players in their best position to succeed, and then they go do it or they don't. And so when you look at Steve Kerr, and the question was, can he coach up what he has to play differently? My argument is, in this moment, I don't think so. She mentioned taking pressure off of Draymond, and by extension, Steph Curry.
Yeah.
That's the point, the whole point. Is Steve Kerr able to take pressure off of them by doing different things with the lineup? He's been trying for a year and a half.
Exactly.
Or does the pressure have to come off of those guys by the acquisition of new talent? Those are the two things they're working on. And in my opinion, it's a new talent thing, not a different coaching thing.
It's not about lineups. It's about offensive approach, which is what Gloria was saying. And I do think that's part of it. And I asked Steve that earlier in the week about, you know, end of game scenarios. What are you doing in the end of games to try to do something other than Draymond and Steph running screen roll? And last night's a good example where Memphis comes out and they just blitz the Warriors, and Golden State didn't really have much of an offensive adjustment. And that, to me, is a bigger problem than any other acquisition. What else can you do offensively if teams are focused on Steph to run other sets, get other guys involved, get other guys to take up some of the scoring slack? Because you're going to see it again tomorrow night. Minnesota's going to come for Steph from the opening jump, because that's all the Warriors have right now.
All right. We thought earlier today we had a really interesting and kind of news-making conversation with Monty Poole of NBC Sports Bay Area with regard to the Warriors situation and the trade possibilities. And most importantly, the way the organization is looking at it. So you take a listen, and then we'll talk it out with you at 888-957-9570. Here's our conversation earlier today. Monty Poole, NBC Sports Bay Area. And we opened it up by saying, hey, after last night, sarcastically, what a perfect day to talk Warrior basketball, right?
Well, I'm not sure they would agree with that, but yeah, not so bad.
I mean, my gosh. Like, okay, so one night, just brush your shoulder off, forget it, move on, or do we have legitimately some signs of major concern here? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there are some signs of concern because, you know, this is looking at a game that they practically did not show up. You know, there was all this talk about setting an early defensive tone, which they didn't do against Dallas on Sunday. And Steve Kerr was like, yeah, we are a defensive team. That's what we have to hang our hats on. And they had a couple of days of practice. They had one game over a seven-day period. And so they had a little bit of time to sort of pull some things together. And then to see that performance last night, yeah, it has to put you on alert. I'm curious to see how they respond tomorrow in Minnesota. If they lose again, if they lose big again, yeah, then sound the sirens, sound the alarms, because you got real problems. If they play well and still and lose, then I think you can ease up a little bit and see where it's going, because it's going to take some time for Dennis Schroeder to be able to assimilate himself with his group. You know, he's playing with a totally different team in Brooklyn. Basically, the last 4 or 5 days for him have been a whirlwind. Yeah, he had about maybe 2 hours worth of practice time with these guys, and he was in the starting lineup last night, and he didn't play well, but who did besides Wiggins? So, I think you don't want to overreact, but at the same time, you got to be on alert to see what happens tomorrow night, because if they get blown out again tomorrow night, wow, that's a real problem.
Yeah, and it's been kind of a real skid, and you know, Mark and I have been going back and forth about the idea of, has Steph earned enough over the course of his year to warrant them to make a move ahead of the deadline if the team is not doing much better. I'm more interested, Monty, in about what you're seeing in how teams are defending Steph, because it seems to me more and more that teams are willing to, you know, top lock him and guard him for 94 feet and really take him out of the game. Are the Warriors not adjusting to this new defensive approach on Steph?
Well, yeah, I think that's part of the issue. That's happened before. But what's happening is that the teams are taking the mentality, which I'm not surprised that anybody but Steph, you know. And it's not that they're saying everybody else can score, but they're saying there's one guy on this team we don't want to see get loose. And you're seeing that a lot now. And Steph is, you know, he's one of those guys that we know he's had some knee issues, both knees. And so you've got some issues there that he doesn't really want to get into. Steph is one of those people who just doesn't even acknowledge his injuries. And so I have no doubt that he's playing through something just because of what I'm looking at. The eye test is telling me that this isn't the Steph that is fully healthy. And he's not on the injury report. He wasn't yesterday. He started. Played 24 minutes, I believe is what it was. So when you're not quite 100% and you're getting 94 feet of pressure, double teams, getting blitzed, it can take something out of you. And so you do need somebody to step up. And so yesterday, I thought Wiggins was the only guy giving him any offense early on, but their problem was that two problems. One, turnovers. You had 8 turnovers in the first quarter. You gave away 12 points to the Grizzlies in the first 12 minutes. And the problem with turnovers, live ball turnovers, is that there's no way to defend it. You know, your defense doesn't have a chance to set up. Might be able to scramble back and maybe get something, but the Grizzlies shot 9 of 10 on fast break points. Guess what most of those were? Live ball turnovers.
Yep.
And you can't defend them. So if you shoot 90% in any part of your game, you're probably going to win. And so the offensive, the poor play on offense was accentuated by the fact that the offense was committing so many turnovers that led to points the other way. So you're looking at a team yesterday that didn't bring offense because it was bad, and the defense, you know, again, the defense didn't look good, but it's worse, made worse by the fact that there were so many turnovers that allowed Grizzlies to go the other way and get easy buckets.
Monty Poole, NBC Sports Bay Area, is with us. Monty, when you see the Warriors play like they are now, I wonder what you think the organization thinks. In other words, the worse they play, does that make them think, hey, we have got to make a trade? Or does that make them think, boy, we shouldn't make a trade because it's not worth it to go for something that's not going well?
Well, I think that's the process they're in right now. Make no mistake, though, Joe Lacob, the CEO, is very much, he's as ambitious as they come. You know, he's not a guy who accepts losing unless you tell him, here's why we're losing, because Steph's out, Draymond's out, you know, Wiggins is out. You know, then, okay. But when he looks up there and he sees the only guy on the injury report is Moses Moody, and you're losing like that, yeah, he is not going to be a happy guy. And so Mike Dunleavy has made it clear that, you know, the shooter trade was a good trade, a sharp trade, a smart trade. It made sense given that they lost Melton, and he sort of replaces that. But they're not done, you know. And the question is, what can they get and what are they willing to give up? And I've been of the opinion that, you know, it's hard to get a real an impact player, a real difference maker, without giving up Kuminga. And I know that's not something that Joe wants to do, but I do also know that the organization is, you know, there's some people who think JK can be an all-star, and others are skeptical still. And after 4 years, you know, I get that side, because you watch them play, and sometimes he looks good, and sometimes he doesn't. And I think if you're Steve Kerr or Mike Dunleavy, that's what you have to figure out. You know, he had this little audition here for a couple of weeks where he was starting in the lineup. He was in the starting lineup, and let's see what he does for us. And again, it didn't go well because they've been losing more than winning lately. So you go back to Draymond, put JK on the bench yesterday and looking for some defense. And Draymond was not good at all yesterday. He was not good at all. So, but yeah, I think he had 4 fouls in 19 minutes, 4 turnovers. And so, he wasn't good. Steph was not good, but I think you can look at the game and see why Steph wasn't good. So yeah, it's a tough skid right now, but I know they're going to be active in talking to other teams, trying to make something happen. But I also know that I don't sense, at least, that Mike or Joe feels like we got to do something right away. I mean, they still have about 5-6 weeks before the trade deadline, and I think that they're thinking, okay, Dennis just got here. Let's see how this looks for a few games, and before we start looking at other options in terms of doing something pretty quickly. But right now, I don't sense that they want to do something tomorrow or the next day or the next day. I think they want to play it out for a few days and see how it goes. Because we all knew that this month was going to be a tough month. We all saw the schedule. You saw who they were playing. And after the cupcakes they had for the most part in the first 3 or 4 weeks, this is like, okay, buddy, gravel road now. What you got? And it's uphill. And you're seeing it. That's your tale is being told by that right now, is that the Warriors are not a great team. They can be good, but right now they're mediocre.
Yeah, and gravel road is a great way to put it. And you've got Minnesota still ahead and the Clippers, and you got Cleveland coming up before the start of the year. And I wonder, Monte, just hearing you talk about like the timeline, is there a chance that maybe they don't make any big moves until the offseason? Because you still have, what, 2.5 more years of Steph, and you still have Draymond. And the urgency we all want to feel this year, but is there a chance that they might wait until the offseason where Kuminga gets signed and then they give him the Jordan Poole treatment where you could actually get more back from him from a salary standpoint?
No, I mean, that's on the table too. This next, I'm going to say, 2 to 3 weeks are pretty critical about, you know, how they will pivot and say, you know, early to mid-January, what are you going to do then? Because that's when, if this team doesn't show signs of coming to life, that's when the buzz will start to, you know, the volume on the buzz will start to go up. And whether they make something, make a move in 2 weeks or 4 weeks or just ahead of the deadline or, you know, maybe in the offseason. I do sense that they will definitely try to make a move before the deadline. But I think that more than likely that move is still, you know, not imminent. I'd be surprised if they had something in the next week or so. I think it's going to be a little more time. They want to see how it goes with what they have right now, because they have to know they're not as good as they were when they started, because they played a lot of teams that weren't very good. And they're not as bad as they are right now. They just look bad. And they looked really bad the last couple of nights. So I don't sense that they are pushing the panic button just yet. And I don't see that from Mike. I don't see it from Joe. They're trying to do some problem solving. And the question is, will those problems get, how long will it take to solve those problems if they ever get solved at all?
Monty, how real is the Jimmy Butler talk?
Everything that I've heard, rumors, whispers, and the whole nine, indicates that, yeah, Jimmy Butler is nice in theory. The concept of having Jimmy Butler on your team is good because he's well known as one of those players who really gets up for the postseason. But everything that I've heard is that the Warriors are kind of skittish about his availability. You know, this is a team that, you know, last couple of years, you know, when Wiggins was out, they missed him. You know what happens if Steph goes out. And so they want to make sure that they want to feel like he can be there for them. And availability has been the problem with him in Miami. That's why he got on the bad side of Pat Riley. You know, Pat's like, yeah, Jimmy's great, but we don't always see him. And if you're the Warriors, and you just went through this with Melton a little bit, they knew it was a risk because he had a back issue last year. But they thought, no, let's give it a shot, because if he's healthy, he can really help us, which is true. But D'Anthony Melton is a lot different from Jimmy Butler in terms of Jimmy Butler makes 4 times the money, first of all. And he's a different kind of player. Jimmy Butler is an all-star caliber player, but he just seems to be in and out of the lineup. And I don't know if the Warriors want to break up their team for a guy who they can't rely on.
Yeah, and that's fair. I mean, especially if he decides that he doesn't want to opt in next year, so now it becomes a 3-month rental. The thing that's sticking with me, Monty, is the idea of Steph Curry and whether or not he can still, quote-unquote, do it. Because at times, yes, he can do it. He can still be one of the top 5 players in the association. But do you look at Steph now, coming up on 37, as a guy who can night in and night out carry a team to be a legitimate, deep playoff team?
No. No, he's got to have help. They know that. The Warriors are aware of that. You know, they're looking at Steph and Draymond in the same vein that Greg Popovich looked at Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili toward the end of their careers. Let's bring their minutes down to the high 20s, low 30s, and put some guys around them. The Spurs got lucky in getting Kawhi Leonard, and so he was able to lead them to one more championship with that group. And Kawhi was huge for that team. If they didn't have him, that championship was not going to happen. But if you're the Warriors, you understand what Steph and Draymond have done for you. You're not going to short shrift them now. You understand how important they are. So you want to keep them, you want to preserve them every chance you get. But at the same time, you're not going to give up on them. I mean, I heard somebody yesterday saying, oh, maybe it's time to trade, you know, make a big trade. There are some guys in the NBA you just don't trade. And number 30 is one of those guys. You know, you just don't. I mean, the Lakers, there was, remember the talk back in the day about the Lakers maybe trading Kobe? Kobe wanted out. Kobe wanted out. Can you think of how silly that would have been? And that was never going to happen. It was never going to happen. And to me, Steph is much the same, in the same same status, a guy that you don't trade because of what he's meant to this franchise. The Warriors are the number one, the most valued franchise in the NBA, and second in all of American sports. How much of that happens without number 30?
Yeah, none of it.
So they understand that part of it, too. He is his own economy. As long as they have him on their team, which I believe will be as long as he's playing in the NBA, he's going to be there. He's not going anywhere. And Draymond, you know, to a lesser degree, yeah, maybe Draymond at some point. But the question with Draymond has always been, what's his value to other teams? We know what he means to the Warriors. But what do you mean as much to another team? And I think that's a fair question to ask.
Monty Poole, NBC Sports Bay Area. Monty, this might be a rabbit hole, but I hear people talking about it, so I'd love to get your insight. Can we go back to the offseason? Based on your knowledge, the chasing of Lauri Markkanen, how real was it? And if it broke down, did it break down because Danny wanted too many draft picks, or was Brandon Pajemski actually the linchpin that he was rumored to be?
It broke down because Danny wanted too much. And I think the Warriors knew that. Anybody who's dealt with Danny before knows he's going to try and fleece you. And the Warriors are looking at Lauri Markkanen and saying he's a nice number two or number three guy. He's long. We could use his length. But we don't want to break up our future nucleus for that. And now I don't know how good Pajemski is going to be in 3 years, you know, but they think highly of him. You know, I need to see more. And so you're looking at Pajemski and Kuminga. Those are two guys that the Warriors look at and say, these guys can be with us for the long term. And I think when Brandon's really good, when he's at his best, yeah, I love him. You know, I mean, when he's at his best, he reminds me a little bit of Ginobili when he was playing for the Spurs. You know, a guy who's not super big, but always gets in the way, makes good things happen. But Kuminga is different. I mean, Kuminga's a different athlete, and wondering what to do with him is sort of where they are right now. And but the trade, the marketing trade was discussed, and the Warriors were very interested. But when you deal with Danny Ainge, you got to know that what he wants, and he's probably going to want too much. And sometimes it's better to walk away when you talk to that guy.
Is there a certain reluctance around the league accordingly to maybe give the Warriors, not a sweetheart deal, but to just deal with the Warriors in general because of all the success that they've had?
I sense that, yes. You know, and not that they won't deal with them at all, but yeah, they don't want to do the Warriors any quote-unquote favors. It has to be a tit-for-tat, you know, okay? If you want our guy, give us your guy, you know, and that's the issue. And, you know, part of that is because, yeah, the success they've had and where this franchise has gone, you know, if you've been around the Bay Area long enough, you know, there was a time when the Warriors were a backwater in the NBA. They were like, nobody wanted to come here, and they were always losing. Ownership was bad, and they couldn't retain stars. Gilbert Arenas got going here, and he said, I'm out of here. Chris Cohan wouldn't even shake my hand, you know. So you know where they've come to. You know where they are now. And you say to yourself, well, you know, you give them a chance. This franchise has really blossomed from the bottom five of the league to the top two in the league. And so I just think that they got to have one eye on the future because Steph is not going to play forever. And, you know, they're on Christmas Day again this year, 12th in a row. And ask yourself, will this Christmas Day game streak continue if number 30 is not there? I got to say no. And if you're looking at that, that means that they're not in the championship picture. They're not right now, and they won't be unless they make another big move.
Monty, it's wonderful to have you at a time where, you know, the frustrations and the questions and everything are at a real high after last night. So thanks for doing it, man.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Okay, there he goes. Monty Poole, NBC Sports Bay Area, with some pretty hefty stuff with regard to what the Warriors are planning. And, again, just put him on the list of people who are in the room with general managers and owners and all of that all the time. And there's not a one of them who's even blinking right now at the idea of whether or not the Warriors are going to make a deal. All of them talk as if this is a complete fait accompli.
Well, they're going to try, but it comes down to what they're going to do. And he also mentioned that, you know, when Steph is gone, are you still going to be a team that plays on Christmas? And you've done it for 12 straight years, and it's mostly because of Steph, and it's because you've had a really good team. And if that comes to pass where, you know, Steph is no longer here when he retires and you don't have anything else around on the team, whatever that is, you're going to struggle. And even if you don't make a trade and you keep Kuminga and Pods and all your young guys and you use your draft assets over the next 2 or 3 years and you draft wisely and you get good, solid rotational players, no matter what, when Steph and Draymond are gone, you're going to have to take a step back. It happens to almost every team anyway. So the reality is there no matter what you do. So if you want to roll the dice and make a big move, a big swing at the deadline, it could work short term or not. And either way, you're probably looking at a rebuild at some point anyway.
Let's hear from some peeps who want to weigh in on everything going on with the Warriors, especially after that conversation and the conversation that we kind of started off the top of the show, which was whether or not the Warriors need to, quote unquote, earn a trade, whether they need to play well enough to show if it's even worth it to give up some future assets. That's kind of what Dib said off the top. My response to that is it's been earned. It's been earned by Steph Curry for years. I'll admit that it may not be the smartest thing to do, but I'm willing to throw some smarts out the door based on having a generational talent that, let's be real, we may never see with the Warriors ever again. 888-957-9570. The ghost of Christmas past in Oakland is on the line. Hey, ghost, what are you doing?
Oh, I'm just hanging out, reminiscing about what it could have been. And so, you know, it's close to Christmas, and it's time to reflect. And if you could share with your imagination, instead of James Wiseman and J.K. and Moody, we should have had a core of Halliburton, Franz Wagner, and Alperen Sengun. And use your imagination now and put those three players together and project what could have been. And that is for Mike Dunleavy to be the ghost of Christmas, present, and future. And so I don't want to get rid of anybody. I don't think anybody's going to give us anything for free. My point is, through the draft, it could have been Halliburton, Franz Wagner, and Alperen Sengun. And again, on this Christmas, I'd like you to think about what that could have looked like.
Thank you, Ghost.
Ghost, I will.
That's great.
We will. I will add this. I don't think it's fair.
No, it's never fair.
I know we love it. Like, do you know how many franchises in all sports, if you just want to go through the last four drafts and look at all the players they passed on and go, should have had him, should have had him. And I know you kind of phrased it as could have. So you're not kind of hanging that around his neck. But, I like, come on. That's not how a draft works. You don't just nail every single pick with the absolute best player that it's going to be.
You don't, but when you do look at certain drafts, and, you know, he was talking about 2021, and you can't really put that on Mike Dunleavy because he wasn't the GM. That was Bob Myers. And it's always going to be organizational, but you get Jonathan Kuminga with the number 7 pick, and Franz Wagner goes right after him at number 8. And many people were saying Wagner was the pick, but I do think there's a certain amount of two timelines mentality that was in place with the Warriors, and they'll never admit to that phrase or that ideology, but you could have taken a more ready-made player. Instead, you took Jonathan Kuminga. You already had Poole. You already had Wiseman, and I do think they had an eye toward 2027 and 2028, thinking, man, we can really develop this good young core, and we can stay good when Steph is gone.
I wonder how much they actually thought that versus how much that was a creation of the conversation versus, let me bring in the third part, like, don't you kind of see Joe Lacob as somebody who's, and I mean this in a good way, not rational. He's not. We're light years ahead of everybody else who has brains. Like, that's the way he views it. And when you're a billionaire and you buy a team, what did he buy the Warriors for? What was the price?
$450 million.
Okay. When you buy the Warriors for about $500 million,
yeah,
and a handful of years later, it's almost worth $10 billion.
It's worth 20 times what he paid.
Like, why would you be rational? Why would you be? You and I buy lottery tickets.
Yep.
Irrational.
Big jackpot tonight, Mark.
I know. Oh, is it tonight?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, crap. I got it.
There's that spot There's on time. Our way back to the car.
I know. But
I go there.
But I need cash.
They have an ATM.
Oh, I'm not gonna go. Anyway,
oh
point
my
being,
God.
No, that's stupid.
So high maintenance.
Where's the where? I don't know. Actually,
there's
oh, wait.
That liquor store three blocks down on our walk.
I know.
They have an ATM. You take out money
and pay all the fees because it's anyway.
You know. But, you know why you wouldn't pay fees? Say it.
Because I don't have Fremont Bank.
Thank you.
Full service banking with no compromises.
Thank you. That's all you have to do, people. Yeah,
well, there isn't one near me. But anyway, the point being is, I don't even remember what my point is. Oh, Joe Lacob.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he sees the world through a different set of glasses. And he thinks we can always do it. We can always do it. And you can't. You can't always do it. Like, I've told you this. I wonder what this is going to look like when there's no more Steph. And if Joe continues to look at Warrior basketball the same way he looks at it now, is it going to be laughable? Like we're all in every year with who, with what?
Well, the interesting thing is going to be when he has to go out there and really bid for free agents in the open market when they have money but they don't have Steph. Because in his mind, Joe Lacob believes that they can go out there and spend as much money as they have to spend to bring in players because this is a place where players will want to come. That is going to be the ultimate litmus test when Steph is gone. Can you go out there and get free agents to come here and, you know, rebuild this thing with the top of the market free agents?
Bobby in Oakland is next. Hi, Bobby. What's up?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Always good to talk with you guys, and thanks for having me on.
You too.
Yes, sir. You know what? I don't know. It may be the minority here. I think the offense that they're running, that motion offense, is outplayed. We're constantly running through Steph, which obviously you want to do, but his knees and age, you got to look at reality. You got Schroeder, Kuminga, Wiggins. You can run some pick and roll actions. I like to see that more. It seemed like they were doing that at the beginning of the year. And let Steph play off of that. But if you run his motion, I don't care who you get, a free agent. It's just not going to vibe with this offense because it's just outdated. Teams know how to play it on a perimeter now. But I wish the ego of Steve Kerr can kind of move out of the way, change the philosophy, and run it through some of these younger guys and see what we can do from here because right now it's not working.
Bobby, let's be real for a second. Can we do a little back and forth on this? Because
yeah.
I hear this a lot. You're under the impression that if the coach would just kind of tweak the philosophy and more feature people in their early 20s, do you believe there's an answer there, or do you believe that you just want to see it?
No, I think it's more the skill set. The skill set of Kuminga and Wiggins, you got these dynamic wings who can go inside out. And basically, when you run the offense through Steph, which is arguably, I mean, how are you going to say not running through Steph because of all he's done? But right now, because of his age and his knees, you got to find some other ways of getting buckets. And I think these guys can get buckets if the offense is running more to their skill set, especially with Schroeder in there now. So that's what I'm thinking. Just think a little bit outside the box and kind of change things up a little bit.
Do you really think that Kuminga and Wiggins are dynamic scorers? Do you buy that statement?
I think they can be. I think they can be. I don't think they get enough opportunities.
Okay. All right. I mean, yeah, fair enough.
Thanks,
Bobby. Thanks so much.
I do think that that's a piece of it because right now your offense is basically Steph go do it, and when Steph can't do it, then you're left with either Wiggins or Kuminga, and I don't think you do have a dynamic score, but Bobby's point I think is well taken where the motion offense only works if you can create shots for people who can make shots.
That's fair. I get that. And I know that there is a thirst for quote unquote seeing what else other people can do, but that's such an exploratory mission. And by the way, you can look around the league at the teams that are quote seeing what people can do. You know what else, you know what they do? They lose. they lose.
That's what this team's doing.
Yeah, but not the whole year they haven't been. They've still won more than they've lost. Like, that's a little cherry pick to me. I get that they're not playing very well right now.
You're a 10 seed right now.
I mean, Jonathan Kuminga is barely shooting 30% from three. That's not a dynamic score that can do inside out.
As
no,
a team,
no, he can't.
You're 13th in the league in three-point shooting.
I get it.
Like, you have one three-point shooter.
I'm not saying it's going well. I'm expressing pessimism that the coach has what he needs and just isn't utilizing it. That's all.
I'm expressing optimism that he will allow other players to take on a bigger offensive role when Steph Curry is unable to score.
We're sponsored by Life Source Water Systems, and we're busy. Because you know what we really, really need to do coming up next?
I have no idea.
FTD, brother.
You watch your mouth.
No.
Oh,
I won't.
Oh, I get it now. Sorry. FTD. I thought you were talking about, like, oh, GFW is the one.
F the Dibbers.
GFW
no,
is the other
fade,
one.
Fade the Dibbers.
You won't.
And more. And you still got time to give us a ring. 888-957-9570. Willard and Dibs.
Now, back to
Will and Dibby
on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, Dibs.
Yeah?
Time for Triples for Autism.
Okay.
Which is brought to you by Pettinelli Financial Partners and the Autism Society San Francisco Bay Area. And if you know our partnership with Pettinelli Financial Partners and the effort with Triples for Autism, you know that there's a donation every time the Warriors make at least 10 threes. And I bet you're thinking, it's only not happened one time this year.
Right.
And I bet a lot of you are like, oof. Last night was probably the second time.
Had to be.
Yeah. Like, I think they hit no threes. Like, Steph didn't hit any. He didn't even make a field goal. Guess what? The Warriors made 12 threes last night.
They made 12? Even through all that?
Which means that last night was not a total loss.
Awesome.
Another donation from Pettinelli to the Autism Society, San Francisco. Fifth donation of the season for Triples for Autism, Andrew Wiggins. Thank you, Andrew. 4 for 5 from deep. So he had 4 of them, and then Slow-Mo had 3 more. That makes 7. Brandon Pajemski had 2 more. That makes 9. And then sprinkle in a few more, and the Dubs get 12, and that is enough for another Pettinelli donation to the Autism Society, San Francisco. To make a donation to autism yourself or to get involved, go to sfautismsociety.org. And that was Triples for Autism, brought to you by Pettinelli Financial Partners and the Autism Society, San Francisco Bay Area. Pettinelli is here for you, offering financial guidance and support through life's milestones. Go to pettinellifp.com. The 49ers. Minus Isaac Garendo, and still no Trent Williams, and all of the others who will not be performing for the Niners this weekend. However, those starters who are available, get your butts in there, play the full game, try to beat your former assistant coach, and who knows how the ball bounces with other teams around the league. Technically, the Niners have not been eliminated. With all that said, they are an underdog at Miami. Just for the third time this year, an underdog by 1.5. It's time to fade the Dibbers.
It's time for
fade the Dibbers.
Please explain.
Nostra Tiblis gives out his pick. You bet against it, you make money.
Cash me out one time.
It's that simple.
Hey, Dibs, your pick stinks.
Dibs, what's the lock of the day?
Dib, say it. Say it. What do you say about the weather when it's 85 degrees?
It's hot.
It's hot.
It's getting hot in here.
Please keep on all your clothes. Dan Dibley has won. 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 in a row.
I am getting so hot, I'm going to take my clothes off.
Do y'all know the movie Hoosiers? Do ya? How many times does he want to pass the ball before we shoot?
4!
That's right! And that's how many Dibs has won in a row. That's what's on the line. Niners plus 1.5. Here we go. Can you make it 5? Fancy Pants?
Yeah.
Let's hear it, Dan.
I can make it five, and I'm hot. And it's been a long time coming. Your boy has been up and down, mostly down, a little bit of up, and four in a row. Now 24 and 22 on the year, including a Thursday night one that was a little bit of a rescue job. We were in some trouble there. Denver looked good. I got myself a free kick before halftime, and the Chargers rolled after that. But look, guys, we're looking at a game here that likely is going to involve two teams out of playoff contention, but they're both playing for pride, and I'm picking for pride. And I know there's no Guerrero, and Ayuk has been gone a long time, no Trent Williams, and the 49ers, really from a motivation standpoint, it's about pride right now, same as Miami, although Coach McDaniel, he's not coaching for his job, but he's under some amount of fire in Miami. I look at the advanced analytics in this matchup, and many of them, most of them indicate that the Niners are a slightly better team. They're a better team. They've done well on the road, and they're getting a point and a half. For me, this one's pretty simple. You take the Niners and the point and a half. Cuckoo! Cuckoo!
I thought we discussed this.
What did we discuss?
I'd like you to stop picking the Niners, because when you do, things go to hell in the handbasket.
Untrue. Grandy has the stats. When I pick the Niners as an underdog, I do quite well, I believe.
When you pick the Niners as an underdog, they've only been an underdog three times, and in the other two, they got blown the hell off of the field.
And I don't think I picked them either time. So there you go. I'm 0-0 picking the Niners as a dog. I've never picked the Niners as a dog and lost.
That's some lawyer crap right there.
They were a dog against Green Bay. I took the Pack.
Yes.
They were a dog against Buffalo. I took the Bills.
Right.
They're a dog against Miami. I'm taking the Niners.
All right.
I think that
I'm not fading you. The Niners should kick their you know what.
Well, I don't know about anybody's you know what.
Yes they do. They kick the Bears
you know what.
Yes they do.
They stink.
Of course they do.
And they beat the Patriots, and they stink.
And the Dolphins kind of stink too. I don't know if you've noticed.
The Dolphins are kind of like the Niners. Disappointing.
The Dolphins were not expected to be like the 49ers by any
stretch.
No, but
the Dolphins are also 6-8. And the Dolphins do have some injuries. Waddle won't play.
Do you know
Tyreek's a little dinged up, if I'm not mistaken.
He is. He's questionable. Do you know that the Dolphins have scored fewer points than the Jets this year?
That's embarrassing.
Yeah, and I know that Tua has been in and out, and that's part of it. Part of it was that offense just completely halted when he was out. But at the same time, they just have not. You want to talk about an offense where the defense is around the league, quote, figured him out. Tyreek Hill could not stop scoring touchdowns last year. He couldn't stop getting open. He was over the top. He and Tua were in lockstep all year. They cannot get him going.
Right.
His engine is off, and they can't start it. So defenses figured out what they were doing, too, and really put the clamps on it. So I've watched a lot of that Dolphins team this year. Pretty unimpressed. And even Tua of late, something just doesn't look right,
yeah.
And I don't know, you know, if Nick Bosa will get going in this game, but he is a very rushable passer, and he really struggles with it. So that, like many games, is the key. If the 49ers are getting a pass rush, they're going to win this football game. And what I feel about the Niners of late, there's been so much talk about weather. When the weather is in really good, when the conditions are wonderful,
right.
The Niners kind of look like the Niners.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a compliment, but that's what this should be. There's no rain, there's no snow, there's no nothing going on. It's just you versus an inferior opponent, and that's the only way that they've succeeded this year.
Well, and the big one for me, matchup-wise, just looking at the overall structure and the numbers of these teams, the one thing that the 49ers have been most vulnerable against defensively is the ground game, and the Dolphins do not run the ball very well. Devon Achane is more of a pass threat out of the backfield. Yep. They do not run the ball great. They don't run it between the tackles very well. That's the Niners' biggest defensive Achilles heel, so that matchup for me automatically favors the Niners. And I do think hearing Brock Purdy earlier this week talking about a little chip, get a little chip on his shoulder, and I think that Brock is coming out playing these last three games. If he plays all three, he's playing not to shut people up, but he's definitely playing to put some better tape out there heading into the offseason.
Kyle kind of laughed that off. The whole, like, Brock playing with a chip on his shoulder. His comment, I'll paraphrase, was
well,
just
he
like,
plays like that.
Yeah,
stuff.
He's like, I've never seen him not play with a chip on his shoulder. He's one of the chippiest people I've ever been around.
Right.
What are you asking exactly? I'm still confused by your question.
Well, that's because you don't like press conferences. But anyway, hey, listen, everybody. We're going to be here on Monday. So this is not goodbye for the remainder of 2024. I will actually be conducting two more radio shows in calendar year 2024. So we'll be back on Monday and we'll talk out this Niner game and all of those things. But I do want to take a few minutes or not, maybe even just a few seconds, just to tell everybody, because let's be real, some of you are going to go away.
Right.
Because everybody's out of school and off we go to our places and spaces. So you mean the world to us. Happy 2024. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Whatever you celebrate. I hope for you that there are just loved ones everywhere and that you have a safe, wonderful time and that you get everything you ask Santa for and you give a lot. Hopefully you give more than you get. And we just appreciate the hell out of you, and we hope that we talk to all of you on Monday as well. But if not, if you're at the airport, safe travels, and have just a freaking blast here with whatever you're doing over the next week and a half.
Yeah, well said. Just enjoy friends, enjoy family, enjoy the time off, and yeah, look forward to talking about a Niner win on Monday, and hopefully we don't have to talk about another Warrior debacle on Monday.
Yeah. Got another game tomorrow night, don't
we? Yeah, boy.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to do it again tomorrow?
No.
Sunday?
Busy.
Monday?
For the last time this year.
All right.
I'll give you one more.
It's like Ocean's 11. You think we need one more? All right. I'll get one more. But we're not done today because our teammate Grandy is about to talk on the radio, and he's brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full service banking with no compromises. For Dibs, for Grandy, for Lucas, I'm Mark, and we invite you to shoot your shot because it's all you got.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.